On Monday, January 24th, at 2:30 p.m., NFL coach Brian Flores received a text from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. The text read, "Sounds like you have landed. Congrats." Well, Flores texted back, "Did you hear something I didn't hear?" Text from Belichick, "Giants?" ! Well, Brian Flores had been let go as head coach for the Miami Dolphins just 2 weeks earlier. Fans were surprised because during the 10 years prior to Flores' arrival, the Dolphins had posted just one winning season. But when Flores started coaching in 2019, he quickly led Miami to back-to-back winning seasons. So, Flores, a 40-year-old head coach touted for his defense, certainly had the chops for another NFL head coaching gig. And in his texts, Bill Belichick seemed to know that the New York Giants, Flores' hometown team, were going to offer him the job. "I hear from Buffalo and NYG that you are their guy. Hope it works out if you want it to," Belichick texted. Well, that was a surprise to Flores because he hadn't even interviewed for the job yet. You see, Flores did have an interview with the Giants coming up in 3 days on Thursday, January 27th. But Brian Flores knew that another Brian, Brian Daboll, was also a candidate for the Giants job and that Daboll had already done his interview. So Flores asked Belichick if he was talking to the right Brian. About 2 hours later, Bill Belichick responded in a text, "Sorry, I messed this up. I double-checked, and I misread the text. I think they are naming Daboll. I'm sorry about that. BB." So, 3 days before his interview with the New York Giants, Brian Flores already knew that the job was not his to win.
"Now, I've worked so hard to get to where I am in football, to become a head coach. Put 18 years in this league, and it was... to go on what was going to be what was a sham interview, I was hurt."
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Last week, Brian Flores filed a lawsuit against the NFL, the New York Giants, the Miami Dolphins, and the Denver Broncos, alleging racial discrimination in their hiring practices. Now, this has been a decades-long issue in the NFL, the paucity of people of color in its head coaching ranks. So today, we're going to look at why that's still the case. And we're joined by Jeremy Duru. He's professor at American University's Washington College of Law, teaching sports law, civil procedure, and employment discrimination. He's also author of Advancing the Ball: Race, Reformation, and the Quest for Equal Coaching Opportunity. Professor Duru, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Meghna. Great to be with you.
Now, the texts from Bill Belichick are the thing that made all the headlines. But Brian Flores is alleging much more in his lawsuit. Can you tell us what he's specifically saying the NFL has done?
Sure. So he's alleging, as you point out, much more. First of all, he's alleging that there exists, not just with respect to him, but there exists league-wide double standards and headwinds that hold African-Americans who want to be head coaches back and African-Americans who want to be general managers back. With respect to head coaches, he notes that the average tenure for an African-American head coach is 2.5 years. The average tenure for a white head coach, 3.5 years. He notes that after a winning season, African-American head coach is 25% likely to be fired. With respect to white head coaches, it's 6%. He notes that getting a second job as a head coach in the National Football League is easier for white coaches than black coaches. So he alleges league-wide headwinds, league-wide discrimination. And then he points out the circumstances in New York, which you just described. Mm-hmm. He feels that he was given a sham interview in Denver as well. And he feels as though race had a lot to do with his termination in Miami.
So tell me more then about the other teams that are a part of Flores' lawsuit, because I'd love to hear more details. Let's go back in time. He's talking about this, what he alleges is another sham interview with the Denver Broncos in 2019.
Yeah. He alleges that he was interviewed by the club pursuant to a rule called the Rooney Rule, which I'm sure we'll get into. The
Definitely.
Rooney Rule is a rule that says you must interview at least one person of color. Now it's two people of color. Initially, it was one person of color for a head coaching opportunity. He alleges that with respect to Denver, he was brought in to do the interview, and he was brought in because he was black and he wasn't really considered. And he offers as evidence for that that the decision makers at Denver came to the meeting an hour late and disheveled. And that he just never stood a chance from the beginning. Now, it should be pointed out that the Broncos have come out aggressively and denied that allegation, but that's Brian's allegation.
Okay. And then also in 2019, please correct me if I'm wrong, Professor, because this one is just, I mean, it's all eye-opening, but Brian Flores is alleging that the Dolphins offered him $100,000 per loss?
Yeah, so eye-opening is one way to put it, Meg.
Yeah. Mean,
you know, this was an absolute bombshell. He alleges that the owner of the Dolphins told him he would give him $100,000 for every loss during the season, which seems so counterintuitive, obviously, because you would think that the goal of a club is to win. You'd want to incentivize your head coach to win rather than to lose. What Flores says is that the Dolphins wanted to do poorly so that in the next year they would get a high draft pick and progress. Flores's view is that what the owner of the Dolphins was doing was setting him up for failure and to be a scapegoat. He goes in, he loses because the, you know, Dolphins owner paid him to. They do poorly. They get a high draft pick the next year. He's fired, and someone else gets to come in and move forward with the high draft pick and try to improve the team. Brian Flores refused. He says that he outright refused to do it, that it's against everything that he believes in, and he believes that was the beginning of the owner of the Dolphins' view that he would not cooperate, would not go along with the program, would not collaborate, and consequently, you know, he was fired.
Wow. Okay, so these are Flores' allegations, those the specific ones, and obviously it's in a lawsuit, so I presume that the specific NFL teams he's talking about here vigorously deny the allegations.
Yes.
But there, I mean, there's the bigger picture here, which has been dogging the NFL for decades and decades and decades, and that is the total lack of diversity in its coaching ranks. So take us back in time here. We will talk about the Rooney Rule extensively in the next segment, but even before that, what did diversity look like, if at all, amongst coaching staff across the league?
Sure. So there's an ugly history with respect to headwinds for African-American head coaching candidates. The first head coach in the National Football League who was black took the job in 1921, if you believe it, just after the NFL was founded in, you know, for those who are listening who know this nation's history, during a time of just outright and blatant and violent oppression. Racial oppression. Somehow he was able to get the job as the head coach of the Akron Pros, a now defunct team. He led that team to the championship, had a great run with them. About a decade later, pursuant to a gentleman's, quote-unquote, gentleman's agreement of owners in the club, all black people were expurgated. They were all kicked out. And they were kept out until 1946. In 46, you started to see black players slowly trickling back into the league. It should be pointed out that they did not trickle back into positions that in football are known as the quote-unquote brain positions, quarterback, middle linebacker, center. They were really kept away from those positions. They slowly trickled back in. And once you got to, you know, toward the end of the century, the late 80s, the league was about 65-70% African-American players.
Right.
But there were no head coaches of color in the league until 1989 when Art Shell got the job with the Los Angeles Raiders. So huge gap between head coaches of color.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that in a second here. But I'm only laughing because it's so absurd. The gap persists, and the league even has its own reports that prove it, right? I'm looking at this report from The Athletic, and they got a hold of the NFL's own 2021 Football Diversity and Inclusion Report. They got a hold of it, and I'm sure you know about this, Professor. Mm-hmm. And the numbers are just kind of crazy. The NFL itself have found that between 2000 and 2020, minority head coaching candidates interviewed an average of 6 times before being hired. The average number of interviews for white candidates was just over 3. Between 2015 and 2020, 3 white coaches were hired after the first interview, while the fewest number of interviews for a minority candidate was 5. And here's the one that just bends my brain. Of 10 of the league's 32 head coaches are actually related by blood, their son, father, or brother of a current or former head coach. I mean, the tight internecine bonds of coaching in NFL is something to behold.
Yeah. I mean, it is astounding. It is astounding. And we could, you know, Meghna, we could examine any number of other metrics and they would paint the same picture. I mean, this is not any, for anybody who studied National Football League and coaching, what Brian Flores alleges is not the least bit surprising. Not the least bit surprising. What's surprising is that Flores stood up to make his allegations public, one, but then take it a step further and make them public in a legal filing to bring suit. That's what's surprising, because it can be very challenging for somebody to, in the National Football League, or really professional sports in the U.S. generally, to challenge the system with racial discrimination claims and keep a career. And so that's what's surprising. And Brian wants to coach. He loves to coach. And the league is better for him being in the league because he's a great coach. So it's very unfortunate that that it came to a place where he had to file the suit.
But at the same time, he's taking a risk that is forcing, rightfully, the rest of us to talk about it, to think about what's happening at the NFL. So, Professor Jeremy Duru, stand by for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk in detail about the NFL's efforts over the past couple of decades to address this major problem with diversity in its coaching ranks. So we'll talk about that in a moment. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about the lack of diversity amongst the coaching staff in the NFL. And I'm joined today by Professor Jeremy Duru. He's professor at the American University's Washington College of Law, author of Advancing the Ball, Race, Reformation, and the Quest for Equal Coaching Opportunity. And we've got some comments here from Professor Duru from listeners. Here's Eddie Dufresne from Vermont, and he is an avid Philly fan.
As far as I could see, Brian Flores was an excellent coach. It was absolutely ridiculous that he got fired, but people get fired for all kinds of reasons. However, he seems to have ample evidence that the reason he got fired was racially motivated. So I think he has a darn good point, and I think this might lead to really good change within the league.
That's listener Eddie Dufresne from Vermont. Now, we talked at the beginning of this hour about how Brian Flores knew he was not going to get the job with New York. So why did he continue with the interview process anyway?
I think there's still hope. Maybe it's call it the audacity of hope. I have a belief that, you know, there's good in people. I just do.
That's Flores on CBS Morning last week. But you also might be wondering, why did the Giants continue the interview if they already knew they were going to hire Brian Daboll? Well, there's a reason for that. They had to, because of something called the Rooney Rule.
In January 2002, two black head coaches were fired in rapid succession, the Vikings' Dennis Green and the Buccaneers' Tony Dungy.
You know, I was upset about Dennis Green getting fired, but, you know, he knocked on the door of the Super Bowl. He was such a consistent winner with different quarterbacks, getting the Vikings to be a perennial playoff team. And then comes the news that morning. Coach Tony Dungy, he literally took over a team that lost 10 or more games every year for a decade. And he turns them around and he gets terminated.
That's Cyrus Mary. He's a civil rights lawyer who, in 2000, successfully won a $156 million racial discrimination case against Coca-Cola. Mary is also an avid NFL fan. So, on Martin Luther King Day 2002, in the wake of Green and Dungy's firing, Mary had an idea.
You know, in the civil rights employment discrimination area, we use a lot of statistics. And one way that we've used statistics was actually in a gender case, my expert was explaining how women in financial services, when they inherited the same portfolio from men, they actually outperformed the men, and yet they had fewer business opportunities. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I know as a fact, I can hypothesize that if we study the win-loss records and the playoff records of black coaches and compared them to white coaches, we would have gotten a window into that same kind of double standard.
Mary and his legal team ran the numbers. They were right.
Black coaches won over 9 games per year and went to the playoffs 2 out of 3 years. And the white coaches went to the playoffs 1 out of 3 years. A lot of white coaches were hired again, and never even actually had a winning season. So that really kind of showed a double standard.
Mary, along with Johnny Cochran, best known for his defense of O.J. Simpson, put their findings in a report titled Black Coaches in the National Football League: Superior Performance, Inferior Opportunities. In the report, they also included specific recommendations.
One was to reward a team that was a superstar team on diversity with a draft choice. Second was level the playing field with an interview process that has diverse slates. And the third one was take draft choices away from teams that violate the diverse slate requirement.
Mary credits the league with taking the report seriously, because that fall, Pittsburgh Steelers owner Dan Rooney led the creation of the NFL's Workplace Diversity Committee. Cyrus Mary recalls,
Dan Rooney told me this story, that every time he raised this idea of the diverse slate, people were hemming and hawing and this and that and that problem and this problem. And then he said, well, does anybody have a better idea? And the room would go silent.
In December 2002, 3 months after Mary's report was released, Rooney led a phone meeting with NFL owners, and he asked them if everyone was on board with the recommendations.
And they gave him, you might say, a gentleman's handshake. So when that happened, a reporter for the Washington Post, Len Shapiro, called me and said, Cyrus, you won't believe it. They voted for your idea. And I said, great. Is it like a written rule? Is it like something that you can really point to? And he goes, no, it's a handshake. I said, a handshake? That doesn't sound good to me. Within the first, literally days after, I'm watching football. As I always do, I guess, on Sunday. And I'm like watching Chris Mortensen and somebody talking about, from ESPN, talking about how Jerry Jones met with Bill Parcells for like 2 days near the airport in New Jersey. And he gave Dennis Green like a 30-minute phone call to, quote, satisfy the Rooney Rule, right? The second one happened a few weeks later when the general manager of the Detroit Lions, Matt Millen, and I'm sure he felt this was honorable, told a series of black coaches, look, I'm hiring Steve Mariucci, but we have this rule. Can you come up here and I'll show you around the facilities? And every one of them said, no, that's an empty shell of a process. So again, you know, the Dan Rooney handshake with 32 owners was like falling apart in front of our very eyes.
Dan Rooney himself, here in a 2015 interview, acknowledged that teams tried to get around the rules.
There were some people that were general managers and things like that who were in the process of hiring would try to fudge it and, you know, not give a fair interview and things like that. And we had to find some teams.
For months, Mary, Cochran, and others pressured the league to codify the Rooney Rule into written NFL policy. In 2003, Mary finally got what he was looking for. The NFL fined the Lions $200,000 for failing to interview a minority candidate before hiring Steve Mariucci, and the league finally put the Rooney Rule on paper. It's been 20 years since Mary first launched the idea that led to the Rooney Rule. But it's been only a week since Coach Brian Flores filed his lawsuit against the NFL alleging continued racial discrimination in the hiring process for head coaches. And yet, Cyrus Mary says he's hopeful that the NFL can become a truly diverse league.
You know, we can get there. There's no doubt in my mind the NFL can get there as America's game. There's no doubt in my mind the country can get there, but the challenges are monumental, but you have to be intentional about it. You have to be intentional and never let your foot off the gas.
Cyrus Mary, founding partner of the law firm Mary & Scallop, he helped create the Rooney Rule and co-founded the Fritz Pollard Alliance, an advocacy group that works in conjunction with the NFL to promote minority hiring in coaching, scouting, and front office positions. Well, Professor Duru, as we've mentioned, it's been 20 years since the Rooney Rule was put in place. Did the rule, though, have some positive effect, at least in those 20 years?
Yes, it did. It did. And quickly, in fact. Just in a matter of years, 3-4 years, the number of head coaches in the National Football League went up from one. Number of head coaches of color went up from one to eight. And the NFL saw the progress, then expanded the rule to apply to general managers. And then the number of general managers of color went up from one to six. Mm-hmm. So you had these huge increases early on. And so, Meghna, there was progress, and I have no doubt that it's attributable to the rule and to clubs implementing the rule properly, and to those clubs having now implemented the rule properly, recognizing that they had largely been ignoring this pool of candidates that can bring value. Mm. And so you started to see people of color getting opportunities. But then, going back to what Cyrus Mary just said, he said we've got to keep the foot on the gas. Well, I think the NFL took the foot off the gas, mm-hmm, and stopped being as focused on the Rooney Rule on a club-by-club basis. The NFL's front office remained committed to it, as far as I can tell. It's individual clubs that effectuated these sham interviews that Dan Rooney was talking about.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit more about why they started taking their foot off the gas. But let me just ask here. I mean, I'm not a football savant, Professor Duro, just to be perfectly transparent here. But I'm just imagining from the point of view of fans, ultimately one of the questions they might have is, okay, well, there were these changes and advancements in hiring. What impact did it have on the game ultimately? Now, I know the NFL is a business, but also there are games that are played. What impact did it have on football?
You mean the increases I've described?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it made the league better. It made the league better. When you select people for these roles, these leadership roles, and you're able to get the best because you look in a broad pool, you're going to have a better product. And in addition, and perhaps more importantly, you now have created a precedent that people of color can inherit these roles and have success. And so the next generation, some of the head coaches who are in the league now, Mike Tomlin, for example, saw the success and were drawn to it, recognized he could have a career going forward in the National Football League. And importantly, when I say it made the game better, it's really critical to note that the numbers, as I described, went up, but the success was there as well.
Mm-hmm.
A large number of coaches of color, general managers of color, reached the Super Bowl, which is the pinnacle in NFL terms, once finally given the opportunity before the Rooney Rule. We just hadn't seen that.
Yeah. I'll at least give myself credit that I know the Super Bowl is the pinnacle. But I that was an important question to ask here, right? Because, like, it's all well and good, and it's a first step to expand the pool, as you were saying, to find the best candidates for any job. I mean, particularly in a place like the NFL, where there are so few of these positions we're talking about. Yeah. And in addition, as you just said, they brought along evidence of their success. So that's really important to highlight, I think. Now, some of the backsliding that you were talking about a minute ago, if I understand correctly, it starts a couple of years ago, perhaps around the time where Dan Rooney himself passes away, 2017?
Yeah, right around that time. Dan Rooney passed away. And you know, it can't be overstated how important I think Dan Rooney is to this story. You know, he put together a Pittsburgh Steelers team that dominated in the 1970s, and he did it by going against the trend of the league and going to historically black colleges and universities and scouting talent there when some clubs totally ignored those pools of talent. Dan Rooney went to those pools of talent because, one, it's the right thing to do, give everybody an opportunity, and, two, it can make you better. And so he saw from that experience that, you know, that searching a large swath of candidate options is what you want to do if you want to have success. Mm-hmm. And so that's the approach that he brought. And so when he passed away, I think there was a loss inside the league. There's certainly people who are committed to the Rooney Rule and to equal opportunity, but Dan Rooney was carrying the flag. Yeah. And when he passed away, you know, perhaps there's a bit of a leadership vacuum in this front.
Hmm. Well, so listeners, I want you to hop on social media, Facebook or Twitter. We're at On Point Radio. And let me know what you think about what I'm about to say, because, Professor Duru, there's something that's really been eating away at me as I've been, you know, coming up to speed on the NFL's history about coaching. It's just, like, really been eating away at me. First of all, that number that I quoted to you from the NFL's own study, that 10 of the league's 32 coaches are son, father, or brother of another coach. So a third of them right now. I mean, fans, like, do you think that's normal? Because that sounds like some sort of skull and bone secret society thing to me. Like, it makes it very, very hard to break for talent outside of that nepotistic circle to break in to these head coaching jobs. And it seems even more appalling in a league like the NFL. I mean, Professor Duru, you had mentioned before, like, we're talking about a league that is entirely dependent on the talent, the lives, and the bodies of black players. I mean, they too are immersed in football. They love it. They know it. And there is no NFL without them. They're giving their lives, literally, to football. So I just don't understand how a league can continue on and not be much more aggressive in expanding its talent pool, because it's right there on the field. It's right there on the gridiron. I don't get it. I'm just baffled, Professor. I'm sorry. I just...
Well, it's tough. I mean, you know, I've been studying this realm for 20 years, and I find myself baffled at times as well why there hasn't been more progress. You're totally right about the numbers that you cited. And you know, aside from the fact that when you have when an organization is there are so many familial connections in the organization, aside from the fact that it creates a small circle, we have to remember that when, you know, people, current candidates, fathers and grandfathers and great-great-grandfathers were in their working years, the black folks were kept out of the league, or had really no opportunity to grow in the league. Very few individuals made traction in the league off of the field. And so now if we're talking about, okay, well, familial relations are important to getting opportunities, well, as a matter of fact, the black candidates will be at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And that's a part, certainly, of what we're seeing.
Wow. Well, we are talking today about the lack of diversity in the NFL's coaching ranks, the multi-billion dollar National Football League, and we're talking with Jeremy Duru. When we come back, we'll explore kind of what can be done about this, what should be done about this, if anything. So we'll talk about that when we get back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is the part of the show where I tell you what's coming up later in the week. And let me tell you, you really are going to want to tune into tomorrow's program, because we're going to be talking about the Paycheck Protection Program. You recall that. It was the $800 billion program that was designed to help American workers in the pandemic in 2020. Well, new research finds that only about a quarter of that money, a quarter of the $800 billion, actually went to workers in the form of paycheck protection. That means $600 billion went somewhere else. So we're asking why. What went wrong with the Paycheck Protection Program? And we want to hear from you. Did you get your paycheck protected as a worker through PPP? Are you a small business or a business owner that tried to navigate the program? What was it like? Where did you ultimately spend the money, and why did you have to do it that way? So we really want to hear stories from workers and business owners. Call us at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for tomorrow. Today, we are talking with Professor Jeremy Duru. He's professor at the American University's Washington College of Law, teaches sports law, civil procedure, and employment discrimination, and he's author of Advancing the Ball, Race, Reformation, and the Quest for Equal Coaching Opportunity. Now, Professor, we had talked about sort of the advance and retreat of the NFL when it comes to diversity in its coaching ranks. And of course, that sort of push-pull goes a long way back. And John Wooten is a man who knows it well. He's a former NFL player, agent, and executive. And we recently spoke with him, and he recalled his rookie season working with retired fullback Marion Motley.
When I come to Cleveland in 59, Motley's at practice every day. And he's telling me how to do this and helping me. I mean, you got to have your hands in here better. You know, you got to hold that left foot. You can't let that guy beat you to the inside. And this goes on and on. So I said, Marion, why aren't you coaching? You know what he told me? He said, I went to Paul and asked him for a job. And he told me that he could get me a job in the steel mill.
Wooten referring there to Paul Brown, then the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Now, Motley never got a coaching job in the NFL, but in 1968, he got an invitation elsewhere to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, which, of course, raises the question why he could be a Hall of Famer but not seen as being qualified for a coaching job. Well, the NFL has changed a lot since those days, thanks in part to the Rooney Rule, which we discussed. But Wooten says he wasn't surprised to hear about Brian Flores' allegations of racial discrimination.
No. No, it doesn't surprise me at all. It doesn't surprise me at all. And that's the hurting part of it. I'm not going to let anybody stand up and tell me that the Rooney Rule has failed. The people who voted to accept it are the ones that have been dishonest. And Dr. King said it best, right? You can't legislate the heart of men. Men has to have that inside of them.
As of yesterday, there are no vacant head coaching positions in the NFL. So since the lawsuit, there's been a lot of speculation about whether Brian Flores' coaching career in the NFL is facing some severe jeopardy. The league's front offices and owners, ultimately, it's up to them to prove whether they're going to honor the policy that they themselves have voted to accept. So if they do, Wooten is certain that Flores will find another opportunity.
There should be no question about his life as a coach. He has done absolutely nothing wrong that would say he shouldn't be coaching in the National Football League.
That's John Wooten, former NFL player, agent, and executive, former chairman of the Fritz Pollard Alliance. Professor Duru, first of all, tell us a little bit about the importance of John Wooten in this long-term story.
Oh, I mean, how much time do we have? I mean,
not enough. Wooten,
John Wooten is a legend, and he's known in the community as the Godfather. I mean, he broke barriers, helped others break barriers, and he had the opportunity as a young person simply because. He went to, I'll be very brief, he went to a segregated high school, and the white high school opened to people of color, I think in his sophomore year. And he went to the white high school, began playing football, had an opportunity from there to play at Colorado, won scholarship, went on to get drafted. And the rest is history. And he says that if he didn't have that opportunity then, he doesn't know what would have happened. And so he's dedicated his entire life, I'm not exaggerating, to trying to create opportunity. And so when he talked about the hurt that he felt when he saw that Brian Flores had to bring this suit, that was heartfelt. I mean, he's dedicated his life to this, and to see that Brian Flores has to bring a suit to create the sort of equal opportunity that should already exist in this league, it's painful.
What do you think about the long-term impact this will have on Brian Flores' career?
Well, you know, I'll say this. If he does not get another job in the National Football League, it's because he brought the suit. I mean, he is widely regarded as an outstanding coach. He came into Miami, had two winning seasons in a row, which I think hadn't been done with that franchise in 20 years. If we go back into the news clippings or online reports 8 weeks ago, he was being mentioned as a head coach of the year candidate. I mean, this guy's an outstanding coach and recognized as such. If he doesn't get another job in the NFL, it's because he brought the suit. He desperately wants to work again in the NFL. I hope he gets a chance. But if he doesn't, we all know why.
Hmm. And so do you think that the suit itself is enough to propel the NFL into another period of advancement? Or does more need to be done?
No, I think more needs to be done. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So a couple of things. The suit, it should be noted, requests systematic change as relief. So in addition to unspecified damages, which are requested, there is systematic relief requested. Brian Flores wants the NFL to institute programs, and he outlines them there in the suit, that will result in greater opportunity and greater diversity among the top ranks, the presidents, the general managers of the National Football League, and would diversify ownership. He wants the NFL to invest in such programs. So that could be big. But also, I think it's critical to point out, and Mr. Wooten made this point, the Rooney Rule, the concept that Cyrus Mary mentioned, is a sound concept. It allows people into the interview room who previously were kept out and historically were kept out. It gives them a chance to make a case. The failing is on the part of the clubs that have not implemented the rule genuinely. I think if clubs implement the rule genuinely, we can see the Rooney Rule being a part of progress in the National Football League when it comes to diversity. The clubs have to be genuine about their interviews, and the league must come down hard on them when they're not.
Can I ask a question, though, about how hiring works in the NFL?
Sure.
Because, you know, as you well know, in other industries across the board, way outside of athletics, oftentimes the interview is like the last step anyway, and it can be really perfunctory. It doesn't really matter because the candidates have been evaluated based on, you know, their existing records, which is maybe a more meaningful metric anyway. So just to help me understand clearly, does the Rooney Rule, does it really just focus on the interview part, or does that the entire pool of potential candidates at the beginning of the search for a new, for any new member of the coaching staff has to be broader and more diverse?
So what's interesting, the Fritz Pollard Alliance, the organization that, that John Wooten was the chair of, creates a ready list, creates a list of candidates for any number of positions, Meghna, from president, general manager, offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, head coaches, and presents that list to the NFL, and the NFL presents it to the teams. So no club can argue, you know, the age-old argument, oh, well, there was nobody qualified of color, so we couldn't interview them. So the process begins there with the Fritz Pollard Alliance pushing forward lists of candidates. When it comes to the actual interviews in the National Football League, the interviews for head coaching positions, they're not perfunctory. I mean, they last hours and hours, and often there are more than one of them, so a first and then a second one. And so it's not a question of them being perfunctory, but it can be a question of them being pro forma. If a club is just interviewing a person of color to check the box and satisfy the rule. And when that happens, that's a disservice to the rule, and that's what gets us into the place where we are now, where a promising young coach has to bring a legal action in order to shine light on the problem.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Thank you for that clarification, because it's not often slash ever that we get to see behind the curtain in terms of how hiring works in a place like the NFL. Now, in the past couple of days, it seems as if, at least temporarily, there's been some like immediate impact from Brian Flores' lawsuit. I think there was kind of a change in plan with the Texans and their new coach. Do you know about that?
Yeah. No, there have been, you know, the Texans hired Lovie Smith, who's formerly the head coach of the Bears, getting to the Super Bowl, I might add, as well as the Buccaneers, and the Dolphins hired a person of color, Mike McDaniel. So there has been progress. But, you know, one of the problems, Meghna, is that we've seen intermittent progress before in the National Football League. And, you know, so I would warn anybody that they should not view these two hires as somehow solving the problem.
Yeah.
It's going to take systemic commitment to solve the problem.
Well, we're getting lots of comments coming in here now. On Facebook, Sam Babbitt says, the owners are all white. The guys who do the work are black. Not a good look. Ann Trollinger is concerned about Brian Flores' career, saying, sadly, he'll probably lose his coaching career because he shined the spotlight. And on Twitter, someone says, I feel as though there is clearly a good old boys network that doesn't value black coaches. The NFL had the same issue with black quarterbacks. And Christopher Curry says, drastic changes need to be made in order to increase equity in hiring for the NFL. A congressional investigation is in order. What do you think about that, Professor Duru?
It's conceivable. I certainly agree with the view that there have to be many approaches taken to solving this problem. I think true and honest and intentional and deliberate implementation of the Rooney Rule is one such avenue. But I'm a believer, Meghna, in every oar in the water, every idea on the table. Those of us who care about this space And those in the league who care about equal opportunity need to stay committed to being creative and finding opportunities to move us toward true diversity and true equal opportunity. The Rooney Rule is one such mechanism. Other mechanisms exist as well. And I think, you know, the key is that we don't, as Cyrus Murray said, we don't take our foot off the gas pedal. We have to keep our foot on the gas pedal. That's something that all civil rights movements have proven. Once you take your foot off the gas pedal, there's going to be backsliding. You'll find yourself back where you started, and that's not a place you want to be.
Well, we've got this question from a listener in Detroit. Actually, I think he's asking about this, the Rooney Rule in particular. Here's Dan Finnegan, again, from Detroit, Michigan.
It seems like they have these policies in place to help with racial advancement and like opportunities and growth to be more diverse. But then, as this example was pointed out, it's just totally not the case. It's just all stunts and shows. What do we do when we find out that the policies that exist are actually just sham policies?
Professor Drew, what do you think about that? I mean, is this sort of shining a light on the inadequacy of the Rooney Rule? And if so, maybe that's also a place. Does it need updating or changing somehow?
I think it should be pointed out that it's been updated several times over the last 5 years. In one respect, it's been updated, as I may have mentioned earlier, such that a club must interview two head coaching candidates of color as opposed to one. And the same for general managers and coordinators. And that's the result of the science, which shows us when you have, quote unquote, two in the pool, you are much more likely to ultimately get a diverse hire. So it's been updated in that regard. It's been updated giving the commissioner authority to punish clubs who don't satisfy the rule. I think the updates have been made that are appropriate. The problem is clubs not implementing the rule, updates or otherwise, and the league not punishing the clubs for failing to do so.
Right. Not using the laws they have on the books, right? So you're saying that the enforcement has to be better.
Correct.
Yeah. We've just got about a minute left to go, Professor Drew. And do you mind if I ask, do you love football?
I do love football. I never played it. I grew up as a soccer player and a mediocre one. I wasn't very good. But I love football. I love football. And I've been involved with the league for 20 years, as I've said, in this advocacy role. And it's painful to see that the game and the league aren't all that they can be as a consequence of there not being opportunity across the board for people to get into the game and influence it. So it's painful. But because I love sport generally and I love football, I can't stop working on it, you know?
Yeah. And that's why this matters, right? It matters. I mean, first of all, just because I think sports are so central to American life that if we can't achieve some kind of meaningful advancement in justice in sports, it doesn't give us much hope for the rest of the country. I mean, is that one of the reasons why this matters?
Absolutely. I mean, sport has often led the way in societal movement in a progressive direction. So this is what's happening in sport here, what's happening in the NFL. It's critical to what's happening in society.
Well, Jeremy Duru is professor at the American University's Washington College of Law and author of Advancing the Ball, Race, Reformation, and the Quest for Equal Coaching Opportunity. Professor Duru, it's been a true pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Meghna. I appreciate you having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.